Hello everybody, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. My name is Lee Mottershead and I'm here to tell you that there is only one subject on the table this week, but many different strands to that subject. That is the 2024 running of the Randox Grand National. And to discuss it with me here in our London studio are Maddie Playl and Peter Scargill. Guys, I was in Liverpool, I was at Aintree on Saturday to watch the race. I found it very enjoyable. Maddie, where did you consume the action?
At home. Nowhere interesting, I'm afraid, Lee. But you've got your creature comforts there and you get a very good viewing experience these days, so can't complain too much.
Pete, you didn't do what people do at Cheltenham, you didn't go off to Malaga to watch
it? No, I went to Chelmsford to begin with.
Oh, of course you did. Yes. You were there for the 10 o'clock race.
I was there for history. Well, yes. this current sort of version of history, because we have raced in the morning in the past. So yeah, went and had a lovely morning racing at Chelmsford, watching horses run with a reasonable crowd there.
Yeah, there were a few people there by the sounds of it.
There were a few people there, yes. Who'd have thought morning racing might catch on?
Yeah. And they're actually real normal people. They weren't just like participants. No, they were
real
race goers
people,
who pay to go in.
People in fancy dress, not AI, no, not cardboard cutouts.
Yeah.
So they were there and then everyone was thinking, oh, we've got a lovely afternoon spare. So I came home and I watched it with my daughter at home.
Who did she have in the sweepstakes?
Oh, the horse that came seventh.
Hang on. Meeting of the Waters.
Meeting of the Waters.
Yes.
Yeah. So she had punter rage afterwards.
Younger racing followers are well recommended to use our Smart View feature, which is now available on the Racing Post app, and some commentary on that here.
Fancy a bet, but find it confusing? Do not fear. Smart View is here to help you. We've taken the traditional race card and removed all the jargon and abbreviations which can be daunting for newcomers. The result is a race card that means making informed choices and picking winners is easier than ever. Our racing experts and data scientists have created an algorithm that puts everything a seasoned punter would consider into the attribute bars you see on the race card and assesses each runner with an overall score out of 100.
Right then, the Randox Grand National on Saturday, a 32-runner race this year after two non-runners, 21 horses finished, seven pulled up, four unseated, and the one who got past the post first was I Am Maximus, 7-1 joint favourite, owned by JP McManus, trained by Willie Mullins, and ridden by Paul Townend. Pete, what did you make of the Grand National this year?
Well, in terms of the winner...
Yeah.
I mean, the winner was very cannily ridden around the inside of the course for a horse that jumps left. He was clearly a well handicapped horse after what he did at Fairy House last time. And it all seemed rather serene and straightforward, really, as it has become the case with all Willie Mullins trained horses this season. It was just serene. He went round and it was that classic that, you know, there was quite a lot of cheering going on at the stage. Probably most people on Kitty's Light, I suspect, from that run to the last, and then he just looked like he jumped in I Am Maximus and skipped clear. So, I mean, probably a winner in the mould of what we're probably going to have to become used to, I would suspect, being a classy, I mean, essentially a Gold Cup horse from what is essentially a Gold Cup horse in second in Delta Work, from a former Gold Cup winner in Manila Indo, and then a horse who was once considered a Gold Cup horse in Galvin. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the race, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a class pack race in many ways, Maddie. And although you can never talk about inevitability about any Grand National, even the modern Grand National, he was clearly fancied. During the week, Willie Mullins had repeated his view that he was probably a Gold Cup horse. When JP McManus was interviewed during the week, he actually said he'd back Limerick Lace. But he did think that if there was one horse who could just stand out among the crowd, it would be I Am Maximus. And yet, although we talk about there being some sort of inevitability about him running a big race, there were jumping issues with him going into it. And anybody who saw him win the Irish Grand National last year under Paul Townend might not have thought at that point he was an obvious winner of the Aintree Marathon.
No, first to do that particular double in quite a while. He's not always been a straightforward horse. Nicky Henderson used to train him, of course, for the late Michael Gretsch. That's a very sad strand to this story. But he's taken some getting to know. He's not a particularly flashy horse at home by all accounts, but he's clearly got a huge engine, and marathon distances really seem to have brought that out in him. I thought it was a daring ride. It was sort of the Grand National of old ride, wasn't it? You want to be front to mid div up the inner. And that's exactly where he was the whole way. He was following horses who were, you know, he's following the right horses. And as Pete's touched upon, the first four were all Grade 1 winners, which seems an extraordinary thing to say in a Grand National. You've got a Gold Cup winner finishing third, but it's classy, and he was a classy winner. For me, the main thing that stuck out was just how strong his finishing effort was. The start of the elbow till the line, he just stormed clear. And that sets him apart as a very unique talent with the weight he had on his back. Maybe he'll be able to come back and do it again next year.
Talking of which, Lee, I'll ask you, because you were at Aintree.
Yeah.
We talked about the front four all being very classy horses, Gold Cup horses.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that's the race that Corrock Rambler ran in this year. But obviously, he unseated the first this year at Aintree. But would he be the sort of horse that could be involved in a finish? Because obviously, they were all Irish, a lot of Irish horses involved at the finish.
Could Corrock Rambler be
the sort of horse he could come back and, you know, run well in a Gold Cup next year and then go on to the Grand National?
Potentially. Although I was just reading a line that Lucinda said on Saturday that I'm not sure I could put myself through all that again. I'm sure she will. I think that's entirely possible. I mean, he was just unlucky. It was Aldenite and Hallow Dandy had sort of done the same sort of thing, and to go in there as the Grand National winner and tip up at the first fence. And ironically, for all that the fences have been changed, it was a sort of a conventional fall. He's just not got high enough, and he's tipped up. And actually, was it the second fence that made me shout out? Because he was not right over, and that was really unpleasant. Mm. Just on him as well, before we could talk about the race again, there were interesting things beforehand in the paddock where Derek Fox was being pestered by two young guys with ONT badges, mm-hmm. owners and trainers badges. And he had to basically say to him in no uncertain terms, can you please go away, leave me alone?
Really?
Yeah, which isn't the sort of thing you want to experience or see before a Grand National. That's maybe something that the jockey club will need to look at in terms of who has access
area. It's one of the great things with racing is that you do get proper access to the jockeys. I mean, often when they're walking between the paddock and the weighing room and what have you.
Yeah.
But it seems sort of oddly unaware of the situation that you'd want to be going up and getting.
Why would you be pestering someone who's about to ride the Grand National?
I mean, you know, he's still a professional sportsman before one of the biggest races of the year. How very weird.
Yes, I felt sorry for him. In terms of those horses, you said all Grade 1 horses. Minello Endo, Delta Work and Galvin, realistically, they're probably not going to come back and win a Grand National at the umpteenth attempt. Certainly for Delta Work, although they all ran really well, that you'd imagine that was their best shot at it. But Iron Maximus, you'd imagine, will certainly come back for the Grand National. Is he a Gold Cup horse?
He could be. We need to find out. Certainly by the way he travels and the way he finishes. And he did jump better on Saturday. So there's the potential there. We've seen how horses have gone from the Grand National to running in the Gold Cup, you know, be Corrock Ramblers, you know, Bull Yeats's. They've not been disgraced at all. And he's probably the classiest of those couple anyway. I'd like to see it given a go. I think the races are probably more linked now maybe than ever before. So there's the potential for him to rate even higher. We'll have to see what the handicap does, what people think of his mark now.
Yeah, after the Gold Cup in the press conference, Willie was talking about Galopin des Champs, and I put it to him that the amazing thing was that if Galopin des Champs has real threats in the coming seasons, they're probably going to come from Claire Sutton.
Mm-hmm. And JP McManus.
Yeah, exactly.
Iron Maximus, etc.
And I think at that point, we probably weren't properly adding Iron Maximus into the equation, even though Willie probably was. But do you think he's good enough, Pete, to be a genuine threat in the Gold Cup? Or is his requirements stamina and jumping actually make him less of a contender for a Gold Cup than a future Grand National?
Well, he seems to be a horse who finishes his races very strongly.
Yeah.
So you might get your classic Grand National horse running on in the Gold Cup. But like, he wouldn't be as good as Galopin des Champs or even Factor Far, would he?
Not yet.
I mean, he just wouldn't be that good.
No.
And in the end, for all the Grand National is now a classy race and we've got all these Grade 1 horses running in it, I mean, Galopin des Champs is just better, isn't he?
Yeah.
He beat Jerry Calame, he then went and won at Aintree this week, and you know, who knows how well Corrick Ramble would have run in the Grand National. So he might be a Gold Cup horse, but like you say, Winnie Mullins has probably already got the Gold Cup horse and plenty of other good reserves already. So he doesn't need to worry, does he?
Absolutely.
He can run him if he wants to, he doesn't have to.
Just on him as well, just maintain the old anecdote front. In the winner's enclosure afterwards, JP Manus was talking about the race and what had just occurred, and he was talking about meeting the winner, Iron Maximus, and we're talking about his jumping, and he said, you might have missed it, but he wasn't amazing at a Beecher second time round, and I had missed it, but I thought what was impressive was he had five runners in the race, and he clearly had his eyes on every one of those, and he didn't miss a thing.
Well, fair play. I find it difficult enough to follow the caps at the best of time. I mean, the number of times I thought I was white cap, blue cap, quarter
cap. Yeah, absolutely.
Fair play to him.
It's also worth noting as well that this is a horse who won in novice company at the start of the season, beating Founder 50, who won over the 2 miles at the final grade one of the meeting. So it's an incredible journey. And that shows, to argue your point, he does have class and he does have pace.
Other great stories through the race. I mean, at one point, it looked like Late Night Pass
was
going to go close.
But
he ran a hell of a race. And ain't that a shame? I mean, in all the...
Ain't That a Shame. He came sixth. We wanted him to come seventh.
Oh, yes, sir.
And Meeting the Waters.
Yes,
for entirely personal position.
Heir to the throne, yes.
Right. But no, carry on.
David Maxwell, he wasn't... People weren't so much taking the mickey out of him before the race, but there was a view that the horse's prospects hadn't been enhanced by David Maxwell buying him and taking him on the mount. It was pointed out, and I was one of the ones that did it, that he didn't appear to get home last year under Rachel Blackmore. So what possible chance do you have of getting home under David Maxwell? But he's run an absolute storm.
Yeah, and maybe that points towards the smaller field sizes and the jockeys. I think they were notably more spread out across the track this year. And no disrespect to David here, but it could be... I mean, he got a wonderful spin, didn't he? But it could well be that he was nicely positioned and out of the way of trouble, and that enabled him to get into the race a little bit more and finish off his race better. But I loved the quote he gave on Look on Sunday yesterday, where he said there was one fence where I got a bit cocky and I was on a good stride and I asked him for a jump and he put in an extra one and I whispered in his ear, sorry mate, I won't be doing that again. And I love this notion of so many of those horses, you feel like they're doing their own thing and they're really enjoying themselves, and the jockeys are the ones who are actually just sitting back and saying, okay mate, I'll trust you. It's really nice to see that relationship.
And I appreciate that obviously a lot of the stick that David Maxwell gets is from people who've backed his horses and they say, oh, he's hopeless, you know, that horse would have won without him, which is probably unfair. Although,
anyone else would have finished any closer.
I think the point I was going to say is that he, for all of the grief he gets, he's got a sort of a wonderful way of just water off a duck's back. He was on 5 Live.
Yeah,
I was listening on the way back from Chelmsford, being interviewed with that. It was with Sam Whaley Cohen, and he said, he talks about an analogy, and he says he calls up the trainers to say, oh, good news, I bought this horse. And then he says, oh, the bad news is I'm going to have to ride it. and he's likened it to Manchester United. So Jim Ratcliffe just bought 25% of Manchester United. And it's like him calling up the manager saying, good news, I've invested in your football club. The bad news is I'm going to be playing left back. For a guy that's clearly putting a lot of money in and loves racing, he doesn't take himself too seriously at all. But clearly he takes what he's doing seriously, but he doesn't take himself seriously.
Absolutely.
To his immense credit, you have to say, because he could easily get upset by it, walk away, not bother. He just seemingly just loves the game.
I completely agree. I adore his self-deprecating nature.
Agreed.
And I think he's a big plus for the sport. Link here now, because were the changes a big plus for the sport? Was the revamp Grand National better than what we had seen in the past? Just a reminder of some of the changes that we had for this year's race. Crucially, the field size limit, the maximum field size, was reduced from 40 to 34. In the end, we had 32 runners because two came out on the day. The first fence was brought forward 60 yards closer to the start. We had a standing start as well for the race this year. And I suppose the other big change was a slight modification to one of the fences going back towards the Anchor Bridge crossing, was that the start time was brought forward from 5:15 to 4 p.m. And Maddie, as I said at the top of the programme, we had 21 finishes, 7 pulled-ups, 4 unseats, no fallers. From my perspective, watching the race, in my colour piece I did at Aintree on Saturday and again in my column yesterday, I was very positive about it. I thought it was a thrilling spectacle. I loved the fact that there were so many horses still in the race going to the chair. I loved the fact that there were so many horses still in contention jumping the second last fence and then again the final fence. I think it's a great thing that we didn't have any fallers. And I referenced in my column the fact that my other half, my husband, who's not a racing fan by any means, doesn't mind a day at Plumpton or Fontwell, but he actually rang me on the way home to say, that was a really good race, wasn't it? There were loads more in contention than usual. That made it more exciting. And from my perspective, he's not an Animal Rising type person. He's not someone that is never going to be converted. He is the sort of floating voter, as I put it in pieces, on which the sport's future depends. And if someone like that watches the race, actually thinks, that was a really enjoyable spectacle, that has to be a good thing. I think the chains are a good thing. I do understand why people look back to Grand Nationals of old and sort of hanker after the past. And I thought Chris Cook rode a powerful front runner piece in which he tried it more like a cross-country chase. But I think overall, given where we are and how society has developed, I thought that was a positive race and good for the Grand National and its future. So I think, what do you think?
The other thing that's changed this year, before I just answer your question, is no parade, which
yes. We'll
have to see how we think everyone's reacted to that. But it seems another positive move. Largely, I agree with you. I think it made for great viewing, and ultimately we have to move with the times. I definitely sympathise with some of the points that Chris Cook was making in his front runner piece, and if you haven't read that already, I would suggest go and read it, because I'm sure that lots of racing fans will empathise with him. But ultimately we can't have the Grand National of old, because times have changed, the society we operate in has changed, and I just don't think it would be feasible or forward thinking in order to secure this race's spot in the calendar and in future. However, I do think there is a train of thought after each Grand National to, as we should, to review and to take stock and to see what we can learn about the race. But I think we're in real danger of obsessing about this perfect Grand National, this faultless Grand National. I think we're never going to get that. You know, there's always inherent risk in this sport. There will always be inherent risk in the Grand National. It's wonderful that this year it was, you know, without any fatalities and it was such an enjoyable spectacle, but that just won't always be the case. And if it's a fatality-free Grand National that we're after, we're probably never going to get that by law of probability. And, you know, if you look elsewhere in the meeting, we sadly lost Giovinco and Picar as well. So that risk is always going to be there. And I think the sport might be trying to build a rod for its own back if we go chasing after this perfection and give ourselves a pat on the back, because as we all know in sport, there's a fine line between these margins and, you know, something sad happening. So I think as much as it was a fantastic job and it showed that the changes have been effective and it worked, I don't think we should, you know, obsess over trying to obtain this perfect result, because realistically that's never going to happen. I agree with Chris in that, you know, it's a very classy cross-country race now, with, as we've said, the top four being grade one winners. And to, I guess, combat that lack of, I don't know, kind of underdog feeling, I think now with the way the race is structured and the changes that have been made, it is for a classier horse. And I think in order to still try and provide some of those really nice stories, we might need some more changes to be made in terms of maybe handicapping a couple of win and you're in races. Let's do it for some of the big staying chases throughout the season.
That has to really happen, doesn't it? That
to really help provide a narrative. You know, horses like My Silver Lining, for instance, won the Classic Chase, second in a Midlands Grand National, been running well all year. Would be a fantastic story. And I must admit, I agree with what some of Paul Keighley and Tom Siegel were saying on some shows over the weekend. Horses like, I will name them, like, for instance, Glenn Gooley, who, you know, gave his rider a massive shout for a long way, is him maybe not in terms of out of form, but he's not truly proven at the trip. And there were a lot of horses in there who hadn't shown their best form for a long time. And I don't think, you know, those are horses who should be getting a run ahead of horses who are, you know, going to increase the competitivity of the race and going to make it a better betting race, a better spectacle. There are going to be more stories involved. So I think I'd like to see some changes to that, to the qualifying system as well, just in order to make the race a bit better. Otherwise, I do fear that it will lose a bit of its unpredictability. It doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with safety, but we can try and improve that in other areas. Really crack down on the sort of horse that we want to be running in the Grand National, because I think that's going to be definitely key to its future. And yeah, I like I say, Lee, I do agree. I do think it was a great success story, but I think there are still lessons to be learned. And I think there is a danger in going, oh, great, job done, well done, let's pat ourselves on the back and move on. Because we're never going to be that far away from danger. And that's just the nature of our sport.
No, there will be horses who lose their lives in the Grand National in the future. And there does come a point at which you have to say, as a sport, we believe we have created a race that is as safe as it possibly can be within the parameters of risk that a race like the Grand National or any other horse race.
And there has to be a point where we stop. You know, if next year we lose, God forbid, two or three horses, are we then going to create a load of more changes to change the race again? You know, you have to measure these things, yes, take stock year after year, but also over a longer period of time to assess their effectiveness. So that would be the word of warning for me. Sorry if that's come across very pessimistic.
No, not at all. Pete, I think it'd be good to look at ways in which the admission into the race, the programming of the race and the weights, the entry criteria might be changed in future years. But just in terms of the race itself that you watched on Saturday, as a racing fan, as someone who I'm sure like the two of us has watched the Grand National from being a kid growing up, did you watch that race cheered or saddened?
All sorts of things I felt watching.
Tell me
all
sorts of things.
We have to sit on the fence. We can't just give answers like that.
Tell me what things you felt.
So I felt as a racing fan, in inverted commas, somebody who's watched a lot of races and involved, that it felt different. It felt more like just a big staying handicap chase, but over spruce fences. Mm-hmm. And it could have, you know, if you'd have taken those horses and put them at Sandown or Kempton, you know, it might have been similar. There wasn't sort of the special Grand National feel about it. And it was unusual to see all those horses coming in with a chance at the end. Because you used to be sort of like three or four, half a dozen horses, sort of two out, you know, when they spin back onto the Melling course properly. So I found that sort of slightly sort of odd, sort of queer, if you see what I mean, sort of strange.
Queer?
No, this isn't what I use. Usually see,
different,
but I think I'm going to have to get used to seeing this. But it was still exciting. There were a lot of horses in with a chance. And like I said earlier, you know, I'm sure a lot of people were willing Kitty's Light to win for Christian Williams and the team around that. And they had an opportunity to do that.
Ran a cracking race.
Wonderful. And you know, in terms of people, I mean, again, you were there, Lee, so you can tell me what the atmosphere was like. You know, for people watching a horse race, presumably they were excited by that. I know my wife's friend, who isn't much like your husband, isn't a big racing person, but she had a couple of bets on the race. I think she had a winner or two, or, you know, from the placed horses. But she was like, "Oh, it was a great race. I really enjoyed that."
Yeah.
So it depends. What do you want out of the Grand National? Do you want it to be the great test of yore with sort of champions winning because they overcome these sort of adversities that they used to do with big drop fences and all that kind of stuff? Or do you want it to be a competitive horse race that showcases the sport well, the horses are safe, but perhaps you're losing a little bit of the you know, the magic of the National or whatever, nothing. But so you could tell me what the atmosphere was like. Was it lesser there as a result?
No, I thought the atmosphere was great. I thought there was a real buzz around the place. There's always a real sense of anticipation when those horses all get down to start. It actually took a while because Mr. Incredible,
that's right, yeah.
Mr. Incredible almost made it a 5.15 Grand National. It was taking so long to get to start.
He was my selection. I sadly didn't get that much of a run for my money. Yeah. I don't think he was that interested from the word go.
I don't think he was, no. But I did sense there was real excitement in the air. Talking about the start, the start seemed to go incredibly well. That was as good as they could have wanted for a start.
Do you think some of that was due to the lack of the parade? And, you know, having to get horses in an order or in a, you know, in a nice
maybe, yeah,
rhythm,
potentially,
whatever.
Yeah, potentially. I think the jockeys deserve a lot of credit because I thought they handled that extremely well. And they did. They used the space available to them on that run down to Beaches Brook. I think having that first fence close to the start must have made a difference because it seemed to me, from the naked eye, it looked like they were going slower to the first fence.
And that was
than
a lot. That
years.
Was the points made.
Absolutely.
When the changes were first made, the speed was one of their big concerns, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I think that worked. I think another point as well, just quickly, in terms of, and this is actually one that Bruce Millington contacted me yesterday, and I use it in the column, having 21 horses finish the race, having so many horses in contention when they turn for home, is a good thing as well, in the sense that you have so many people have a bet once here in the Grand National, occasional punters. And if more of them feel they're getting a run for their money longer into the race, then maybe they might be more enthused to participate in the future.
And if it's more, if a more competitive race is only a good thing in theory, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, competitive in one sense, in the sense there's more horses there, but not competitive when Willie Mullins' battleships come in and blow everyone away. But it just comes down to what the Grand National is. One of these races, because it's so iconic, it's almost quite personal to people, isn't it?
Yes.
So if you're going to change things and you might end up sort of, people might be feeling disenfranchised by it because it's not their Grand National. It's a Grand National. It's the Grand National's been changed to suit people who aren't me, and I'm a racing person.
Yes.
But I don't know, it's hard to defend a race that's more dangerous. We want it to be more dangerous. We want more chaos. It'd be like saying, I want Formula One races with more crashes because I like the crashes and because they're spectacular.
But at heart, isn't the Formula One angle I really like because...
Thanks, Matt.
Well, it's a pleasure. No, because... Maddie, you're a Formula One fan.
I am. That's why I was laughing at what Pete
said. But isn't it fair to say that a lot of general sports fans that watch a Grand Prix, if truth be told, they're watching it half waiting for a crash?
Yeah, I definitely think so.
And there will be those who say the Grand National's raison d'etre is the thrills and the spills. And there will be some traditionalists who... No one wants to see a horse injured. Of course, no one wants to see a horse injured. But there'll be some traditionalists who regret the fact that there weren't a few falls in the race and it didn't look more like a Grand National. But the reality is that whilst those thrills and spills are what made the Grand National unique and maybe attracted it to an audience of once upon a time, a modern audience probably isn't as keen to see those thrills and spills and wants to see a slightly more sanitised race in that race, but one that hopefully still produces the excitement and spectacle that I thought Saturday did.
That's the balancing act, isn't it? I think it's unpredictability. You don't want things to become predictable. You don't want Willie Mullins to be winning the race every year because he's got the best, classiest horse over those fences.
And I think he's only won it twice so far. That was his first one since 2005.
So far is the rather honest word.
Here I am talking about how, you know, we can't, you know, get carried away after one Grand National, and here I am giving the next 20 to Willie Mullins.
We're all getting carried away. That's how it works in here, man.
But you take my point in that it's a race which he is more likely to win by virtue of having more of the better horses, etc., etc. And I relate to that. I like having a bit of unpredictability. I don't want necessarily danger, or I don't want any wish ill on anyone, of course not, but I like to be surprised. And I think there are ways that we can still incite that and retain that element of the race, I hope, without compromising safety, i.e. looking at that criteria.
Yeah, so should we just touch on that before we move on to other issues? Maddie, you've mentioned winning your in races. And it would have been unsatisfactory, wouldn't it, if Kitty's Light, as the defending champion, or having won last year the Ida, the Scottish National and the Bet365 Gold Cup, had he not got in, and he only just got in as one of the 10 stone six horses. So he only just got into the race. I've referenced in the past, I think it would be better for the Grand National if we scrapped the idea that the weights are fixed when the weights come out in mid-February, and I would much rather see a situation whereby penalties could apply, as in any other handicap apart from the Grand National and the Bet365 Gold Cup. So there was still a chance through February, March, and even into early April for a horse to win a race and get into the Grand National. And I was on a preview night with Ruby during the week, Ruby Walsh, who spoke about how he has other views about the entry criteria, and maybe it's too easy for horses to get into the Grand National through qualification criteria that is more historical, and that it needs to be much more recent than it is now. So, for example, if Vauban and Absurd want to go back to the Melbourne Cup, they have to, in effect, re-qualify.
I thought you were going to say, if they wanted to go for the Grand National, they could get in.
Well,
I thought you've seen an angle.
You never know now, you never know now, do you? But yes, I suspect that those things should and will be looked at. Do you think they should be looked at, Pete? And do you think the sport should be revisiting that debate that it briefly had a few months ago about whether trainers or perhaps owners should be limited to a certain number of runners in the Grand National?
So do I think there should be strict qualifying criteria with penalties and whatever? Yes, I do.
Winning your ins?
I like winning your ins, yes. Yeah, I think I like the idea of that.
Yeah.
Although we probably can't call them winning your in because that's Breeders' Cup.
Maybe you need to have a winning your in though with a set barometer so that you wouldn't want a 119 rated horse getting to the Grand National, would you? You'd have to have a...
I don't know.
Okay, maybe you would. I cut off your flow, carry on.
No, not at all. So yeah, I do like the idea of that. I do like the idea of making it more relevant. I think that would encourage people to campaign their horses more,
yeah,
which is always something we're concerned about, isn't it?
Yeah.
People not running their horses enough. What was the other thing you asked me about?
The limitations on owners.
That was discussed
this year in relation to trainers.
Right. Yes.
But is it something that should be discussed again? Obviously, William Mullins and Gordon Elliott had 8 runners each. It so is. In the end, they had 50% of the...
Yes, and much of the finish to themselves. I mean, is this not the inherent problem that we have at the moment?
It's a jump racing problem, isn't it? It's
not Yeah. So you know, these guys have the best horses.
Yeah.
And if you've got a better race, they're going to have more of the good horses in it.
Yeah.
So I don't. Could you limit them? Yeah. I mean, you know, the rise of super stables and the ability of these yards to have so many horses has squeezed the others, and it's only going to get more that way because it is so hard for you know smaller trainers to make it work. Because of you know the effects of costs and prize money issues and what have you, and the fact that the big guys get more of the success, I think British racing would be foolish not to revisit it, and say, well, look, we've now had this, we've had a season, what do you think?
Yeah,
whether they'd be met with the same robust no as they were when they floated out this time, perhaps they would do, but they can't just ignore it because that would be, you know. Who's to say they couldn't have 10 runners each in the race next year? You know, that's.
And it should be said that the top British trainers generally were very much against the idea of a limitation that would realistically apply to William Mullins and Gordon Elliott because nobody else is sending
out. No, of course. And it's not really the sort of implementations you want to have on something.
No.
You don't want to be putting in restrictions. But at the same time, are allowing sort of unchecked domination by a small group of people surely can't be to the benefit in the long
term. It's not a healthy thing, is it?
So it's. I think the gist of what I'm trying to say is yes, they should revisit it. Yes, they should look at it. And they should consider it in a round, but it needs to be like that rather than saying, well, look what happened this year. We'll ban a lot of them.
Yeah. And I just wonder if there's the more nuanced way of creating a more competitive race by looking at things like winning your ins, by looking at bringing back penalties and looking at the wider qualifications criteria so that horses that really shouldn't be in the race are less likely to get in the race. When we're talking about domination, the British Trainers' Championship. So I'm looking...
Can we call it the British Trainers' Championship if William Mullins is going to win it?
The trainers' championship that relates to races staged in Britain.
Yes.
Catchy, that, isn't it? So looking on page 3 of Monday's edition of the Racing Post, at this stage, Willie Mullins, $2,874,000. Dan Skelton, $2,821. Paul Nicholls, $2,746. Just before we came into this studio, I was looking at the entries for Air on Saturday. If you're watching this now, you'll know the precise numbers, but at that point, it looked as though Willie was set to have over 30 entries at Air on Saturday. I think he had 6 in the Scottish National. He had 10 in a novice hurdle. So it looks like he's keen. I spoke to him extensively about this for the colour piece from Aintree on Thursday. He was making clear how very keen he was to go for it. It wasn't lost in him that Vincent O'Brien, racing legend, had done it twice from Ireland in the 1950s. And he pointed out that, you know, when he was going around Aintree as at Cheltenham, lots of people have been saying to him, Willie, we want you to go for this and we want you to win it. And he said they were British people as well as Irish people. And I think clearly it would be a massive achievement, but also it adds massively, doesn't it, as well, to the final 2 weeks of the season, because one would hope this would be going right up until Sandown on the final Saturday. We've had this once before when Willie was involved in the title. It went up to the final Saturday. It could provide, couldn't it, a thrilling denouement to the championship.
I like that, yeah.
Do you like that? I
it
like
could
that
do, yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm surprised he's never won it before, really, but I guess that's testament to Paul Nicholls, Nicky Henderson, and how well they've done with the opposition and how the racing landscape has changed. I kind of think he should be winning it almost, shouldn't he, with the quality of horse that he's got in his yard these days?
What's he been doing all these years?
No, I'm not saying
come
that.
On,
come on,
Willie.
Really. Goodness me.
I'm not saying that.
Put your finger
that
out, man.
I'm not saying that at all. I think it will be a great achievement, but he has got some spectacular horses who have been doing a lot of their racing in Britain and in these incredibly valuable races. So if it's something, as he's clearly recognised, that he wants to go after, it's clearly within his grasp. Paul Nicholls and Dan Skelton have both said they're not going to, obviously not going to lie down easily. And it gives us a nice narrative to close out the tail end of the jump season.
Okay, who will win it?
That's hard.
Have it while you're thinking. Pete, who wins it?
Willie Mullins will win it.
Yeah.
It is an astonishing amount of prize money he's won. Because to think how much he's won in Ireland as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's gobbled all up, hasn't he? All that prize money.
Yes, he has.
Goodness me. But he is obviously in the strongest position. And we are running out of time. It's 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Left.
Basically Sandown and Air with good stuff at Cheltenham. And,
you know, it's going to be those big meetings with the classy horses, which is, so Paul Nicholls and Dan Skelton can have as many winners at Warwick and Taunton and, you know, places like that as they want to. But if Mullins is going to come up, did you say a 10 in a novice hurdle?
10 in a novice hurdle. And that's not even a particularly valuable race.
No,
mean we get like an El Fabiolo at Sandown or a...
Well, this is it. I mean, how much will Punchestown come into his thinking as well? I don't know, but he's in the dominant position, and I suppose it would take, you know, Dan Skelton probably to be incredibly relentless. Nicholls is too far behind, isn't he?
Yeah. He's only.
Can we write him off?
130 grand or so.
If we write Paul Nicholls off, that'll really rev him up, and he can make it even better for the end of the season.
I wouldn't be writing off Paul Nicholls. Maddie, who wins then?
Probably say Willie, but whoever wins the Scottish National, I think that'll set momentum going, won't it? We don't know the final runners at the moment, but if one of the other two can win it, that will make things really interesting.
Okay. Before we wrap things up, there was lots of other good racing at Aintree as well as the Grand National over the 3 days. Pete, what stood out for you?
I thought Brighter Days Ahead was excellent in terms of a performance. And I love seeing Arizona Cardinal win the tough one.
But James DeBellay, I was less keen on seeing Arizona Cardinal.
Yeah, well, there we are, Lee. There we are. You know, I am the yin to your yang.
Shameless
and
plug.
You did beautifully too.
I was on Arizona Cardinal.
Oh, there we are.
So, okay, we'll just kick New Ireland down, both of you.
I know Kieran reasonably well. Kieran Gethins, who rode the winner.
Right.
So I was delighted for him. And they were jubilant.
It was a good story. So, yeah, absolutely.
So that was excellent. I enjoyed that.
And the Nicky Henderson revival was a big thing. I mean, loads of his horses, Maddie, ran really well at Aintree. Obviously, so Gino and John Bonn won big races. Shishki ran well and now goes on to Punchestown. given what had happened to him at Cheltenham, that was an entry for him to celebrate.
It was, and it was great to see. Django Bay was another one who nearly cinched one of the handicaps. I thought that was a really eye-catching performance. It is slightly self-indulgent, but just to go back to the Arizona Cardinal thing.
I think we should talk about it at length.
I did put him up. This is not after timing. It was in the Weekender. Stuart Evans is a genius, I think, because he targets Aintree, and after this horse won at Ludlow, it was before he ran at Ludlow and won, he said, we want to run him at Ludlow because we want him to go up in the handicap. We're going to target the Topham. And to get that right, I think, is incredible. And once again, just shows when smaller trainers are given the ammunition, they can pull off an incredible feat. Great ride. Obviously, I enjoyed it. But I do think Stuart does very well at that meeting. You know, had a hometown boy win a good race there. He's had other good winners at it, so he's always one to keep an eye on. I really enjoyed that as a story and as a feel-good result. Thought Brighter Days Ahead was magical and interesting reaction from Gordon Elliott, who was nearly in tears afterwards.
He's
not a man that we associate with emotion very much, Gordon Elliott, but it clearly meant an awful lot to him, and she looks spectacular, so can't wait to see what she does. But let's not forget she did get put in her place by Golden Ace at Cheltenham.
Who sadly couldn't run at Aintree.
Yeah, I really want to see Golden Ace again.
Yeah, that'd be great. Pete, you love a bit of disciplinary intrigue and an inquiry. What do you make of the Aintree hurdle?
Oh, good race.
Yes,
good race.
Wasn't it?
Dear old Langerdam continued to defy his skeptics with a good performance. Just getting a thrilling finish. Right result in the steward's room.
You think it was the right result?
I do think it was the right result.
Okay.
Fascinating analysis afterwards by Ruby Walsh on ITV talking about how Paul Towner had to go when he did, even though he was in front too early. What about the tactics of a race?
Yeah.
This fantastic insight we get from him on ITV. But no, right result. Enjoyed the steward's inquiry. Always like a bit of needle me.
You do, don't you?
I do.
Like a bit of needle. You do.
But no, good race.
Okay,
good race.
You've delivered me a perfect segue because I was going to ask Maddie, talking about Ruby there. Ruby had a lunch on Friday that formed half my...
Did you only go to lunches, Lee, this week?
No, I ate, haven't we?
I ate in the press room on the Thursday and the Saturday. I had a very kind invitation to the chairman's marquee on the Friday, but I was clearly still working because I got half a colour piece out of it because Ruby was being interviewed by Rishi Prasad, little tipping thing. And he was talking about the top novices hurdle in which Firefox was running. He spoke about how he was doing his prep for ITV in the morning, and he said the quality of the pictures was not of a level that would allow you to properly show how Firefox was interrupted in his advancement through the race from two out to the final flight. He said in a room that was full of British racing leaders and racecourse leaders, that in effect racecourses weren't spending enough on pictures, overhead pictures that you get at the Breeders' Cup, Melbourne Cup, Dubai World Cup, he mentioned the Grand Prix de Paris, and he basically said to the room, you need to do better for the good of the sport. It was really strong stuff. What would you make of that, Maddie? Do you agree with Ruby that we need to produce better, in Britain and Ireland, he was saying, that we need to use better pictures for fans?
I totally agree, because this is something that I was due to write about before Cheltenham. I was watching all the Dublin Racing Festival races back prior to the festival to try and find some winners. And I just found it incredibly difficult for those Leopardstown races, particularly in the big sort of 20 runner handicap hurdles, handicap chases, when the camera is so far back, particularly if conditions are bad as well. It's so hard to see which horse is which, as well complicated by if you have the JP McManus thing of just the cap to differentiate them. So I definitely agree with that. I think it adds to the spectacle. I think it adds to the analysis. It can help us make sense of these results a bit more. So I can see why Ruby was asking for that. Definitely agree with him. One other thing I'd like to mention is I've never actually been to Aintree, which is pretty
fabulous.
Unbelievable. I need to go. And I think this year's racing really hammered home how much I need to go next year, because there are a lot of people who thought it was better than Cheltenham. And I can see that.
Is that the trendy thing to say? Is that just like...
Hipster.
Yeah.
No, I think so. Because Cheltenham is the first meeting point of these horses against each other, isn't it, these days now. And Aintree, you've already had that. So it's now time to delve into those different rivalries and why, and have horses from different divisions. You know, you had your Langerdans stepping up, you had your different horses stepping up to 3 miles and different horses stepping down to 2.5. And there's so many more strands to the races. And I do think there were some really competitive, fascinating, sort of meaty finishes to get stuck into. And I'm not saying that Aintree is better than Cheltenham, but I definitely need to go because I found it thrilling viewing.
Yes, it was sensational. My goodness, we've spoken about a lot there. You enjoyed yourselves?
Well, we've enjoyed ourselves immensely, I believe. Yeah. Yes, I'm speaking for Maddie for some reason. I don't know why. Or was it the royal we? I don't know. I've lost the plot by now. We've been speaking for so long. Yes, it was very enjoyable, Lee. Thank you for hosting us.
I don't need let you get away with that, by the way.
It was a pleasure. And well done again with Arizona Cardinal. Before we say goodbye, I need to tell you that we have a fantastic offer in relation to the Racing Post Members Club. Okay, Cheltenham is done, Aintree is done, and there is the little matter of the flat season about to kick off. Pete Scargill will be at Newmarket this week. I'm popping along on Thursday. Greenham and Fred Dullenday on Friday. The Guineas will be along soon. Goodness, it all happens fast this time of year. The producer Sam, has said to us that we have to give you some flat horses to follow. We have been pondering this morning. I'll give you a couple in a second, but they're far better than I am. Who do you want to know? Who wants to go first?
I'll go. Firstly, I did a stable tour with Dominic French Davis, and he made me aware of a very nice horse he's got called Padesha, who's got a very nice pedigree, who holds all sorts of entries this week in the Wood Ditton. He cost €300,000 as a young horse. He's got a lovely pedigree. He's a half-brother to Sparkling Beauty for the Ammo Racing team. That was a winner for them last season. And I love that he's by Wooden Bassett. I think it's such an exciting sire. The way that Dominic spoke about him, put him down in my notebook. And I love all the different entries he's got. I think he's in the Irish 2000 Guineas. I think he's in the Dante. He's in all sorts. So hopefully we get to see him this week.
Okay, Pete.
Not particularly dark horses.
Okay.
Shame on you.
Yes, I know. Well, you know you get with me. Embesto, who's in declared for the Ella Sefton at Newmarket on Wednesday. Horse of Roger Varian's lovely chestnut horse, very talented. Is only going to be better as a four-year-old. So like him. And Treasure, that featured in John Harding's stable tour with Rafe Beckett today. A filly who sort of came from nowhere to win first time out, nowhere as in the stable's expectations.
Yes.
To win first time out in Nottingham for the King and the Queen. He's going to have the Lingfield Oaks trial, and that is Rafe Beckett's Oaks sort of teeing up race, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Yes.
So could we have a Royal Oaks winner?
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Well, you're so good at delivering these segments because one of my two horses to follow was going to be, well, it is going to be Desert Hero, owned by the King and Queen.
It's with your Melbourne Cup hat on that, isn't it?
Well, hold yourself on that one because there's going to be more on that point. I loved his campaign last season. I thought he was really impressive at Goodwood. Maybe didn't quite get home in the ledger. Think they probably did the right thing by not taking him to Australia because he could be a proper mile and a half horse this year. And that Melbourne Cup thing you mentioned, I've said this before on this programme. I think I might have said it on the start of 2024 special. I think Vauban will go back and make amends and win the Melbourne Cup. He'll have to re-qualify, but I think he will.
I've got one for you for that.
Oh.
Why are we talking about the Melbourne Cup now? It's not
because it's long enough away that people will forget.
He's not wrong.
Isle of Jura.
Okay.
Or George Scott, yeah, won loads of races out in Bahrain. He's going to go straight to the Hardwick now to be given his chance at a really good top quality mile and a half race in Britain. George and Charlie Fellows, his Newmarket fellow Newmarket trainer, have a podcast, and Charlie and George were having a bit of winding each other up about how Charlie never managed to win the Melbourne Cup, and George has got a perfect. Charlie was saying he's the perfect horse for the race. Mm. Totally agree. So keep your eye on Isle of Jura.
I most certainly shall. Pete, Maddie, thank you for watching. We've been discussing basically the Grand National all episode. Tom will be in this chair next week for a Wood Ditton special, potentially. If not, there might be other things on the table as well. It'll be really enjoyable. Do tune in. Until then, bye-bye.